Thank you to the organizers and to Perimeter Institute. So I'll speak about dispersion relations, which is work in progress with Simon Caron-Huyot. So the talk is separated into two parts. The first will be about amplitude dispersion relations, which will be a review, which will warm us up for the derivation of the CFT dispersion relation. So what can I say about dispersion relations? A dispersion relation is an integral relation which constructs a complex valued function from its values along its cuts or along its boundaries. So it gives the function in terms of its discontinuities. And perhaps the first use of dispersion relations was the work of Kramers and Kronig in the 1920s, which related the real and imaginary parts of the index of refraction. And such relations have been used heavily in physics since, in particular in the 1950s and 60s, in the context of the strong force, people have used dispersion relation in conjunction with assumptions such as analyticity and Reggie behavior in order to try and bootstrap the relativistic S matrix. And well, this S matrix bootstrap program was not extremely successful. Nevertheless, it did give rise to the Veneziano amplitude, which then remarkably gave rise to string theory. So of course, it was worth the effort. And of course, crossing symmetry in CFTs is much more powerful. And indeed, in the last 10 years, people have numerically bootstrapped models such as the 3D Ising. And analytical methods have been important also. And in the paper of 2 years ago by Simon, he derived the analog of the Fourasser-Gribov inversion formula, this time for CFT four-point functions. And he also emphasized the usefulness of this analogy between amplitudes and CFT correlators. So throughout this talk, we will emphasize this analogy as well. So a CFT four-point function can be written in terms of some prefactor, which is determined by the conformal symmetry, times some function, curly G, of the cross ratios, Z and Z bar. And this is the function that we would like to obtain a dispersion relation for. OK, so we'll start with part one of the talk. So amplitude dispersion relation. And we will derive this dispersion relation through two different methods. You will see why. So the first one is via a contour deformation. I'm sure that you all know this. So imagine that we have a function M of t, which is analytic, except for cuts, and assumption two, assume that it decays at infinity at large t, fast enough. Then we can use Cauchy's theorem in order to write M as a contour integral dt prime over t prime minus t, m of t prime. And so the contour looks like this. This is t prime plane. So m has some cuts on the real axis. And then this is the point t. And then the contour is around the point. And then, of course, what you do is you deform this contour to look something like this. And from assumption two, you can drop the arcs at infinity and you get contribution from the cuts. So you get m of t equals integral along the cuts, dt prime over t prime minus t, and the discontinuity of the amplitude, or whatever function you have. And this is a dispersion relation. And it's a single variable dispersion relation, because there is one integral here. And just notation. So whatever function goes inside the dispersion relation, we call it a kernel. So this will be, it's called the Cauchy kernel for obvious reasons. It's a function of t and t prime, 1 over t prime minus t. So just as an example of how it works, one can consider a test function, m of t equals t to some power minus alpha. And then you take the discontinuity of this function, you get a sine pi alpha, and then you can plug it inside the integral, you perform the integral, which cancels this sine pi of alpha and gives you back the original function. So this is what a dispersion relation does. So dispersion relation is heavily used in S matrix, so consider 2-to-2 scattering, and then you have Mandelstam variables as T and U, and then all you need to do is put here M as a function of T and S, and T prime and S here. And then in this single variable dispersion relation, S just goes along for the ride, so it doesn't have an important role in this dispersion relation. Okay, this was the first derivation of dispersion relation. Now let's show an alternative derivation. So dispersion relation via inversion formula. So let's consider the scattering amplitude, and it's partial wave decomposition, so sum of spins from 0 to infinity, 2j plus 1, a, j is a function of s, these are partial wave coefficients, times p, j of t, so these are Legendre polynomials. I'm being a bit sloppy here in the argument, but it's not going to be important. So I'm working here in d equals 4. In general dimension, these p will be Gegenbauers. So now we assume, so let's call this equation 1. Equation 2, we assume the existence of an inversion formula for the partial wave coefficients. And for example, one can prove the inversion formula through a contour deformation argument quite similar to this one, but I will not show it. So an inversion formula gives partial wave coefficient aj of s. First of all, you separate them into two parts. One for a t-channel cut plus minus 1 to the j. Contribution from the U-channel cut. And then, for example, the T-channel cut is given by an integral along the cut, dt prime q j t prime times the discontinuity of m t prime s. Well, q of j is the Legendre of the second kind. Which is related to the Legendre of the first kind by this integral formula. Integral minus 1 to 1, dt prime, t prime minus t, dj, t prime. So you see that the Legendres are related to each other by this same Cauchy kernel. So now, in order to derive the dispersion relation, what you do is you plug the Lorentzian inversion formula inside of the partial wave expansion. So plug two inside one, and you get the following. You replace the ordering of the integral in the sum. You get m of s and t. Equals integral along the cut dt prime discontinuity of m t prime s times sum of j from 0 to infinity 2j plus 1 pj t qj e prime. So it's a sum of two Legendre functions, and you can easily look it up in the literature or just compute the sum, and it's 1 over t prime minus t. So you got back the dispersion relation. Few comments. Notice that we started in d equals 4 and we got this Cauchy kernel. If we would have started in arbitrary dimension, this would have been Gegenbauer, and we would have gotten exactly the same kernel as we should. So the kernel doesn't depend on dimension. So we will do the analogous procedure for CFT in the CFT case, and we will work in two dimensions, and then in fact we will check that when we do it in four dimensions we get exactly the same kernel. Okay, so this is the procedure that we want to do for CFTs. So completely analogous, we start with the conformal block expansion for the four-point function gz of z bar. So in the principal series representation, we have sum of j from 0 to infinity d delta 2 pi I on the principal series. Then we have a coefficient c of j and delta times the conformal partial wave, fj of delta z and z bar. And these guys, this is the conformal block plus the shadow block, and these are the guys which will be a nice orthonormal basis in Euclidean. And the c of j and delta, it has poles where the physical scaling dimensions are, and the residues of these poles gives the squared OP coefficient. So A squared equals res CJ delta at delta physical. Okay, so now we need to write down the Lorentzian inversion formula. Luckily, Simon obtained it in his paper, so inversion formula. So C of J and delta is separated into two parts, a T-channel contribution minus 1 to the J, a U-channel contribution. And these guys are separately analytic in spin. And this C of J and delta in the T-channel is given by, there's a function that we call kappa hat. It's a function of delta plus J. You have an integral from 0 to 1 dw, dw bar. And now you have what we call an inverted block. It's a conformal block with Weyl reflected numbers. So delta minus d plus 1, j plus d minus 1 is a function of w and w bar. And then you have the double discontinuity of g of w and w bar. So let me, first of all, define this kappa function because it's going to be important for us. So kappa at of delta plus j is just a ratio of gamma functions. Delta plus j over 2, gamma delta plus j minus 1, gamma delta plus j. And this function, it has double poles when delta plus j equals minus 2m, where m is a positive integer. So if we look back and compare these two boards, we see that we can have this analogy between amplitudes and CFT correlators, in which, well, the Legendre polynomial is analogous to the conformal partial wave. The Legendre of the second kind is analogous to this inverted block. We had the dispersion relation for the amplitude, and our goal is to find the analogous quantity for the case of the CFT correlator. So again, we plug the Lorentzian invariant formula inside the conformal partial wave expansion, plug 2 into 1, and we immediately get a dispersion relation, g of z and z bar equals integral from 0 to 1, dw, dw bar, some function k, call this the kernel. It's a function of z, z bar, w, and w bar. And then we have the double discontinuity, g of w, w, and w bar. Well, we defined, let me use shorthand notation for a second. So instead of, let's define these rho coordinates. Rho of z is defined to be this. And then instead of writing each time z, z bar, w, and w bar, let me just call them rho i's. So the kernel is defined function of the four coordinates. You can see from here, sum over j, integral over delta. You have this kappa hat function times this inverted block of w and w bar times the conformal partial wave f of j and delta z and z bar. So this is the expression that we would need to compute in order to compute this kernel for the CFT dispersion relation.
The argument for the inverted block
should be the inverted? Yeah, usually J and delta. I write J and delta first, and then here I write delta and J. But if you want, it's delta minus D plus 1 and J plus D minus 1.
Yeah. Can you explain why can't you follow something like the first approach, which was much easier for the amplitudes? Why do you have to go through the inversion?
Yeah, indeed, we tried for about a week or two, the first approach, and we couldn't make progress, so we just moved on to this brute force approach. I mean, it's complex analysis in a double complex plane, basically, so we weren't sure how to do this.
Okay.
I'll have more to say about this in the end, about a possible approach. And just a reminder, this is the analog of the equation that we had before for amplitudes. Sum of 2j plus 1, pj and qj, but now it's much, much more complicated. So I will show how to derive the analytic results for this kernel. But first of all, we can already say something interesting. So this is an aside. So let's assume that we already computed this kernel. So recall that we had this equation between the integral relation between the second Legendre and the first Legendre, T prime, P of j, T prime divided by this Cauchy kernel. Now, so you see that the Cauchy kernel is what relates the two. So if you look at this analogy table, you can already imagine what would an analogous relation would be. It would be an integral relation between the inverted block and the conformal block. So it will look something like this. The inverted block is a function of W and W bar equals integral dz dz bar. Conformal block f delta z and z bar. And what relates the two is this kernel. So this is an integral over. Did you ask what is the integration? Euclidean. So it's on the z complex plane. And this relation holds for any d, any delta, and any j. So it's a set of relations. Okay, so that was an aside. So now we want to derive the result for this kernel. And I guess one reason why I'm dragging you through this computation is because at least at two points there will be some magic happening. So it's interesting to see it. And in hindsight, this magic is obviously caused by the effect of the conformal symmetry. So we want to compute this integral in sum.
Excuse me? Yes. Should I worry about convergence in some of, like the Lorentzian inversion formula not converging for all spins?
For the low spins?
Yeah.
Yes, but it would be completely analogous to the usual dispersion relation in which you would have to add subtractions. In case the integrals are not convergent, you would have a finite number of subtractions. So, is that what your question was?
Yeah, I mean you're including j equals zero in the sum, right? And for that, the Lorentzian inversion formula is not supposed to converge.
Right, right.
So. My question is this a rigorous derivation, or can you make it, if not, can you make it rigorous?
What I can say is that in the end, we will check that it's correct. So I guess it justifies the initial steps. So we want to start by computing this delta integral. So of course, what we do, so if this is the delta plane, the original integration contour is this principle series, d over 2. And then we have poles of the integrand to the left and to the right. And of course, what we want to do is to close the contour. So we can close the contour either to the right, or to the left. And we make this choice according to whether we can drop the arc at infinity. So we need to look at the large delta behavior of this integrand. So the large delta behavior of the integrand goes like rho z bar, rho w bar, rho w to the minus 1, all to the power delta over 2. So it has a simple delta dependence. Now, let's define this product for simplicity to be rho naught equals this product. And then we see that we have three regimes, right? Three kinematical regimes. The first one is when rho naught is larger than 1. In this case, we close delta to the left, and then we can drop the arc at infinity. So we close to the left. Second region is rho naught smaller than 1. And in this case, of course, we close to the right. And there's a third option, when rho naught is exactly 1, in which case the arc at infinity does not decay. And in this case, we will have a divergence. So we know that our kernel, it has a delta function at this point, rho naught equals 1. And the coefficient of this delta function, let's call it k2. So now we want to look at these two kinematic regimes. So we need to look at what are the poles of this integrand. We need to pick up the residue of the poles. So the block has poles, the inverted block has poles, and kappa has double poles, as we showed here. And as it turns out, the poles of the inverted block and the conformal block, when you sum over j, they exactly cancel in pairs. So they give zero contribution. So we don't need to take them into account. We just need to take into account the poles of kappa hat. Now, kappa hat is only poles when you close to the left, as you can see. So when we close, yeah.
So just to make sure, so F is the sum of block and shadow, and G is really block, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and the poles you are saying are the poles in F and in G?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you said they cancel, these poles?
Yeah, these poles cancel once you sum over j. Once you sum over the tower of poles, they have a tower of poles. Once you sum over the tower of poles and sum over j, they cancel in pairs, basically.
Well, what's the reason? How do you see it so fast?
Good question. I don't think I have a good answer for this. Okay, so what I was saying is that when we close to the right, there are no poles that we need to consider. So in this case, the kernel is in fact identically zero. Okay, so half of our work is done, and we need to just check this case when we close to the left and pick up the double poles of kappa. Closing to left, we get So I'll just do it very quickly. You pick up the tower of poles, which we label by M. You can sum over J quite easily. And then you use some recursion relations for the hypergeometric functions. In fact, let me write an explicit expression for the, let's now stick to D equals 2. So we can have an explicit expression for the blocks. So as usual, the blocks G of J and delta ZZ bar are given by K delta minus JZ, K delta plus JZ bar. Sorry for the proliferation of Ks, but that's the notation. So each one of these is hypergeometric function. So these two blocks will give, they will a total of 4 hypergeometric function. So what we get is, let's call this contribution K1. There will be some differential operator that will act on everything. It's not important. Then we have a sum of all the poles labeled from 0 to infinity. Derivative with respect to M prime. We have a derivative because these are double poles, so we need to take a derivative. Then we have some gamma functions inside. And then we have 4 k's coming from there. So k to the minus 2m, k minus 2m prime, k to the minus 2m prime. And then this one is a bit different, k2m prime plus 2. So each one, so this is a function of z, this one is z bar, this one w bar, and this one w. And then after taking the derivative, we need to put m prime equals m and sum over all integers.
Sorry. I was distracted for a minute. So aren't there more terms? There are a few terms like this, or this is the only term?
The blocks
is kk minus kk. It's not just kk, right?
Ah, yes. So you will have, for example, a term which is replaces z and z bar, for example.
So there are 3 more terms there.
Yes.
I see.
But it's just simple to look at one term. It will be enough. So this is the sum that we have to compute, and it's a sum from 0 to infinity of a derivative of a product of 4 hypergeometric functions. So it's quite a horrible beast to compute. So we didn't know what to do in this stage, and so we just said, let's look at a specific simplifying limit of this sum and see if we can at least compute that. So we looked at the limit when w bar goes to 1. And in this limit, so w bar appears only here in this k. In this limit, you act with the derivative on this particular k, and you get a log divergence. So there is a log divergent piece, which we can single out and compute its coefficient. And when you take the derivatives and plug m prime equals m, what you get is the following. So as w bar goes to 1, you have a log divergence, 1 minus w bar, times a sum, which looks like this, m from 0 to infinity, 2m plus 1. You have pm, 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 qm. Each one is a function of z, z bar, w, and w. This is w bar. So it's a so you get Legendre functions, p, 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 q. And this is the sum in this limit that you will need to compute. Now, the remarkable thing about this thing is that this coefficient, 2m plus 1, turned out to be the canonical coefficient of Legendre functions. And if it would have come out to be anything else but 2m plus 1, we could have not have computed this sum. So this was very lucky. And in fact, these type of sums computed in the math literature. For example, there's a paper by Baranov in 2004, which computed this in terms of elliptic integral functions. So elliptic K. I'll write down precise expressions in a moment. OK, so we derived the kernel on a specific limit, W bar goes to 1. We found out its log divergence. However, we needed the full kernel. So we went back to this equation, and we said, how the hell are we going to compute the sum? And so we had no choice but to make a guess. And this guess was inspired. So a guess of the result of the sum. So it was inspired by the following mathematical identity. So if you have an elliptic K at x, it has a log divergence, log of 1 minus x, which is itself proportional to an elliptic K with a shifted argument, 1 minus x. 1 minus x, and then you have non-singular terms here. So now you can all see what the guess would be. We assume that what we derived, this coefficient of the log divergence, is this guy. And then the guess would be that the full thing is this guy. And so then you have a guess, and then you can numerically compute the sum and see if the guess is correct. And indeed, the guess turned out to be correct. So we have the full thing. So this is just a mathematical identity. If this is an elliptic integral of x, then it's given by log of 1 minus x times elliptic integral of 1 minus x. I'll show what the argument will be in our case of the dispersion relation. So let me write down the final result for the kernel just so you can see. So the dispersion relation, again, is given by g of z and z bar equals integral from dw dw bar from 0 to 1, a kernel k times the double discontinuity. And this k has two terms. It has a term with a delta function, as we saw, which is k2 rho I delta rho naught minus 1. And then there's a k1 term, which is proportional to a step function. Because if you remember, the kernel was 0 in half of the range. So we can write it like this. Now let me write this k1 and k2. So k2 is given by function c divided by a times b to the 3/2 times rho naught minus 1, where c, a, and b are given by these combination of rho z bar, and same for the w's. Now let us write K1. Sure.
It looks like the K2 vanishes on the support of the delta function, which multiplies it. because there is a factor rho 0 minus 1.
A has a pole, so I just cancel this pole. So K1 is C over B to the 3 halves. And then 2F1, hypergeometric, at 1 half, 3 halves, 2A. And this guy is just a compact notation for elliptic K minus elliptic E, two elliptic integrals. Okay. We can write down a few properties of this. How much time do I have? 10:45. K is positive, at least when rho z and rho z bar are real and between 0 and 1. It has some symmetries. I mean, if you replace z and z bar, K is unchanged, as it should. So let me write now an interesting observation which would be related to a possible contour deformation proof. So let's define an object called the pre-kernel. So K pre is very similar to K1. C over B to the 3 halves, and again a 2F1. The first two arguments are the same, 1 half, 3 halves, and then the third one is 1 and 1 minus A. So it's a bit different. And this 2F1 has a property such that it has a pole at rho naught equals 1, and the residue of this pole is precisely the function K2. It also has a log term at rho naught equals 1. And the coefficient of this log is exactly K1. And then you have non-singular terms. So inversely, you see that K1 is basically given by the discontinuity of K pre, and K2 is given by the residue of K pre, both at rho naught equals 1. So you can perhaps think about trying to do a contour deformation for this pre kernel and extracting its discontinuities and residues and obtaining this dispersion relation. So this will be a possible contour deformation proof. So finally, let me just make some few comments and talk about preliminary stuff. So one can perform checks of this dispersion relation. For example, you can define some test correlators to be something like z, z bar, to some power m, divided by 1 minus z, 1 minus z bar, to some power n. You can take the double discontinuity of this guy, plug it inside the dispersion relation, and check numerically that you get back the same function. So this is the test of the dispersion relation. You can do it for other correlators, such as n equals 4 super Young Mills. And it gives a perfect matching. So what about unequal scaling dimensions? So far, this dispersion relation was for equal scaling dimensions. In the case of unequal scaling dimensions, we were not able to find an analytic function like this. However, we know that its kernel satisfies some differential equations, and we can write down a series expansion for the kernel. There is a special case, which is A, so this differences of scaling dimensions, A and B. When A equals 0 and B equals 1/2, which is, by the way, last week, Shomerus mentioned this case in which this is the case in which the Calogero-Sutherland Hamiltonian vanishes. So it's a simplifying case in many instances. In this case, in fact, the kappa function has no poles. And so K1 will be 0 in this case. And we will only have a contribution from K2. So the dispersion relation will look something like gz of z bar for a equals 1/2, b equals 1/2, a equals 0, b equals 1/2. Integral from 0 to 1, dw, dw bar, k2, which had a delta function, times the double discontinuity. Now, because of the delta function, you can perform one of the integrations, for example, the W integration. And then you get dW bar from 0 to 1, K2 d disk at rho naught goes to 1.
Sorry, maybe you said it before. So before you were putting all deltas to be the same? That's why we lost A and B?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So we see that what we get is this is dispersion relation is a single variable dispersion relation. There is one integral. And it contains a double discontinuity. So it's kind of a mixture. But it's a simple case. Make a few more comments. What about d equals 1? The dispersion relation only holds for d equals 2 and higher, mainly because the inversion formula holds only for d equals 2 or higher. When d equals 1, luckily, recently, Dalimil obtained an inversion formula in this case for the principal series. And there was a previous paper that obtained an inversion formula for the discrete series in D equals 1. This case is kind of fundamentally different because it's kind of a crossing symmetric inversion formula. So it also depends on the external scaling dimensions. And for special cases, such as delta phi equals 1 and 2, you can write down explicitly the inversion formula and do this whole procedure to get the dispersion relation. And what you get is something rather simple. So you get a kernel which is it's just a single variable dispersion relation because we have just one cross ratio. So it will just contain logs and rational functions of z and w. So this might be a nice testing ground because it's much simpler than this kernel. So what about a double dispersion relation? A la Mandelstam. So for the amplitude, you can kind of iterate the dispersion relation, plug it into itself, and obtain a dispersion relation with both S and T. And you can try to do something similar here, plug this dispersion relation inside itself, and you get something very complicated. The hope was, of course, to build the correlator out of Q-disk, but it seems that it's a bit different than that, and it's not entirely clear. And it's, so more work needs to be done about this. Another preliminary thing is, what happens if you take the bulk point limit of the dispersion relation? Do you get back the amplitude dispersion relation? So it seems like this is possible, but more checks need to be done about this. So some future directions. Okay, so some obvious future directions will be spinning correlators, perhaps how to understand or how to parameterize subtractions in a nice way. People have obtained inversion formulas, not for four-point function, but in other cases, such as for boundary defect CFTs, for thermal correlators. So one can repeat this, the procedure for those cases and obtain new dispersion relations. What would be interesting would be higher point functions. So both obtaining an inversion formula and obtaining dispersion relations. And maybe for this conference, maybe the most interesting thing would be to think about how to bootstrap using the dispersion relation and crossing. And this will be kind of the similar to what people tried to do in the 60s with the S matrix. Another contour deformation I mentioned, and of course, I mean, if all of this is just like complex analysis, then can we have dispersion relation with higher discontinuities and with more variables? So that would be interesting just from a mathematical point of view. So to summarize, we obtain a dispersion relation for the four-point function, and we managed to compute the kernel of the dispersion relation analytically, and hopefully this will be useful in the future. So thank you.
So you mentioned that the kernel satisfies differential equations.
You
mentioned that the kernel satisfies. So the formula you get is very, very simple in the end, right?
Yeah.
For the kernel. And you mentioned that it satisfies differential equations. How do they look like? Because when you wrote one of its properties that relates the inverted blocks to the F blocks, these shadow symmetric blocks, there was a relation, right? So it means it should imply some differential equation directly for the kernel. Anyway, my question is, what is the differential equation for the kernel?
One equation is the Casimir equation, which it should obey because it depends on the integral of the blocks. And I think another equation that we had is that you demand that the kernel in, you can do the same procedure in four, we did it in two dimensions because we plugged in the end the explicit form of the blocks. You can demand that the four dimensional result would be the same. And this gives you another equation. For the equal scaling dimension case, in fact, we did this whole procedure for four dimensions and we got exactly the same kernel. So this assumption seems solid.
But you don't have like a shortcut to get this formula from some differential equation?
There probably is, but I didn't look at doing this procedure and seeing that it's easy to get.
Supposed to go there?
Like it was an indirect pass, right? So that, to confuse the goalie. So I was a bit surprised by a list of future directions. Like, first you gave us a list of things that can be done, higher points that were not, and the practical application is the last, and you haven't said anything. Like, shouldn't you first tell us why should we care about this? And then tell us that we should work on higher point functions.
Well, I mean, it's...
Or maybe you, I don't know. It's just insane. You have a complicated formula, don't tell us why we should care.
So Bootstrap is one application. It's similar to what people did for the S matrix. Now, I cannot tell you that I know how to do this explicitly.
Just Bootstrap, just show some fact about CFTs that this formula implies, something concrete. Bootstrap or not Bootstrap? What does this teach us about CFTs?
I don't have a good answer to this question.
Let's add it to the wish list.
A follow-up on a question that Balt asked earlier, or perhaps just asking the same thing again. So we know that in the case of physical correlators in unitary theories, the Lorentz inversion formula doesn't apply for spins 0 and 1.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, is the claim here that this dispersion relation should apply without any subtractions?
Oh, you should add the subtractions by hand, basically. Just as for amplitudes that you add by hand subtractions. I don't have much to say about it.
So concretely here, how do you do subtraction? So a simple way to think about it in amplitude is you apply the usual dispersion relation to the amplitude divided by t minus t zero, which has better high energy behavior at large t at the cost of you need extra data because there's an extra pole at t equal t zero, which is the full function of s. So we can do the same thing. So you just apply this dispersion relation to the correlator times u over v, and then it's guaranteed to converge. The price to pay is that having 1 over v gives you an enhancement of the leading twist trajectory in the cross channel. So normally the leading twist is suppressed in this double discontinuity by a numberless dimension. Now you pay that suppression for the leading trajectory. But what this suggests is that somehow if you know the leading trajectory very well, you have all the information to reconstruct everything to spin zero. That's one thing one can see from that. The special rule by the leading trajectory.
A very nice talk. It's very clear. There is one more piece of the amplitude story that maybe would be nice to see how it fits into this puzzle. So you started from the expansion for amplitudes in the form of AJS times PJT. But in many cases, this is sometimes called finite energy sum rules or some variations thereof. You can replace AJS by a simple pole.
Simple pole?
Yes. Or maybe an integral over simple poles.
Mm-hmm.
So replace, instead of AJS, you write 1 over S minus M squared.
Mm-hmm.
What's the CFT analog of that?
I don't know. We can talk about this afterwards. I don't know.
This is like in theories of weakly interacting higher spin particles.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very good ansatz.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a good ansatz in many other situations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this seems analogous to the game that you know very well in the analytic bootstrap, where you just keep the lowest guy in the cross channel. So that I would say it's the analogous.
Not sure.
Out of curiosity, so the, if you approximate the correlator with a few D-channel blocks, right, and you try to say something about the S-channel spectrum, then this Lorentzian inversion formula gives you remarkably good answers in some cases. So here, if I'm interested in computing, approximating the Euclidean correlator with a few T-channel blocks, I can now do two things. I can just compute it, like compute the T-channel blocks, say it's Z equals 0.1 and Z bar equals 0.1. Mm-hmm. Or I can use your new formula. Do I get the same answer? Do I get a different answer? Do I get a better answer if I use your?
Well, we didn't perform this check, so I wouldn't know if we get a better answer. But I mean, yeah. I guess the hope is that computing the doublet continuity, just in general remark, computing the doublet continuity is a simpler function than the four-point function. And then so this formula gives you a connection to how to construct the four-point function from it. But yeah, indeed, it's yet to be seen what precise applications and what more this can give.
Thanks.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, let's thank Dean again.